You have no choice but to listen now. You're caught in the Wampa's lair.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome back to the Wampa's Lair podcast, episode 8, The Lure and Appeal of Star Wars. I am one of your co-hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, as always, is the R2-D2 to my C-3PO. We have Mr. Carl LeClaire.
Hey, Jason, how are you tonight? I'm glad I get to be R2. I thought that was your favorite character, so you're really esteeming me tonight.
Oh, yes, yes. R2 is my favorite overall character. But tonight's episode, we have a special guest who's joining us for this amazing topic. We have the Brutal One. Joe, welcome to the show.
Oh, why, thank you. I'm honored to be here. Yeah, I noticed you stuttered there. Most people can't pronounce my last name, and that's fine. I like it that way.
It just makes you all the more mysterious.
Oh, absolutely. We Sith are mysterious.
It's great. Joe, we're so excited to have you on the show. And luckily, you know, as we do the show over Skype, if we say anything that upsets the Brutal One, he can't, luckily, do too much. You know, Force Lightning doesn't work over the computers.
Well, you know, in Empire Strikes Back, Lord Vader demonstrated that he could force choke somebody over great distances. So
I'd use
caution if I were you.
Well, the thing is, with that, they were still on the same starship. You know, here we're, you know, three different states. So hopefully that distance is just a little too great for you.
I see you plan on testing my abilities. I'm always one for a challenge here.
Great. Oh, dear. I guess we will just start off with the lightsaber matchup that we introduced last episode. Jason Solo from the New Jedi Order versus Savage Opress from the Clone Wars. We did get several Facebook responses to this duel. Let me just bring those up right now. We have Jesse Ariano, and he says, I'm going to say Jason Solo. Savage Opress will maybe put up an okay fight. I only seen him in the Clone Wars, not so sure about the comics. Jason has more power than Savage, but Savage has more muscle and strength, and he could hurt Jason with a few good blows. But in the end, the victory goes to Jason. And then we have Brian V. Klein. He says, this one is easier to pick than the last few you've done. I'm going with Jason. I agree with Jesse that Savage has more brute strength than Jason does, but Savage is still learning to harness his force powers, whereas Jason is well-skilled in the force and can handle a lightsaber well. I'd say that Jason would administer the death blow when Savage gets frustrated with not being able to damage Jason and overshoots his mark, leaving him vulnerable. Then we have Thaddeus Matney. He says, I'll admit to being a little biased on this topic. Jason is one of my favorite characters from the EU, and I've never been a Maul fan. Now, Jason was very much a pacifist during the New Jedi Order, so that coupled with the opponent's brute strength would give Savage an opening advantage. But in the end, Jason has more training and Skywalker blood, so he puts Savage in his place real hard and real fast. And then last but not least, our friend Jazz from Norway says, Jason, without a doubt on this one. Savage is a formidable opponent, yet has pure brutish strength and no finesse. His knowledge of the Force is negligible in comparison to Jason Solo. So we got a lot of responses this week, and I'm interested to see what you, Carl, and you, oh Brutal One, have to say on this lightsaber duel.
Well, I'll jump right in real quick, in case the Brutal One needs to put together his brutal thoughts. But yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with all our listeners. This is, for me, would be a pretty easy victory for Jason Solo. I really like Jason Solo as an EU character myself, and I think he has. One of the listeners brought up the fact that he is a bit of a pacifist during the New Jedi Order series. The New Jedi Order series is the one series I still have yet to read all of the books from. But, you know, I have a really good sense of his strength in the Force. And, you know, he doesn't necessarily need to be an excellent warrior to beat Savage. You know, if it came to, like, you know, a simple feat of strength, I think it'd be pretty obvious Savage would win. But when it comes to, you know, a Jedi battle, I think Savage is just far too untrained. He's far too savage, as his name indicates. He just wouldn't have the skill and the calmness in which to fight that type of battle. I mean, perfect example of that, you know, when Luke fights Vader in Return of the Jedi, you know, Luke all of a sudden has become a far better fighter simply because he's controlled his emotions. And I think Jason would be very in control of his emotions. And he is a very adept fighter when he needs to be. So I don't think Savage would pose much a threat. So that's my opinion. I'm going to go with Savage. So now for Jason. That's 5 votes for Jason. So, Lord Bruticus, what would you say on this one?
Yes. Now, why not make it 6 votes then?
Now,
Savage Opress demonstrated in the Clone Wars, while under the tutelage of Count Dooku, a.k.a. Darth Tyrannus, that he needed more tutelage. His learning experience was rather shocking, wasn't it? So I really think then that given all of Jason Solo's vast experience gained with, Vergeer, I think that, Savage Opress will quickly become Savage Oppressed very quickly.
Well, I guess I'm going to make it a 7-0 vote here. I think it would be a bit closer than I think most people are saying, simply because in the New Jedi Order during the Yuuzhan Vong War, Jason does try to restrain himself a lot. And for a good share of the series, is a bit more pacifist and doesn't really want to fight and get into the battle and all that, but towards the end he does start growing and expanding in his strength and knowledge. However, Savage, aside from having a height, weight, and strength physical strength advantage, has a lot of raw power and raw strength, and he can take a few blows. As we've seen, he can take quite a few blaster bolts without suffering hardly any damage. So I'd say Jason, if he can withstand Savage's opening, savage, brutal attack. So
well,
that's
my
take on that.
It's a very easy one to turn out there. So good. And just a quick note to thank the listeners. You know, this was the most responses we've had for Lightsaber Duel. From Jason and I, thank you. We appreciate that, and we hope to see that continued response and even more responses. It makes it a lot more exciting. So obviously we'll introduce next show's lightsaber matchup at the end of this episode. So obviously stay tuned.
Exactly. Well, I guess we should jump into our main topic for this episode, the lure and appeal of Star Wars. You know, what makes Star Wars so interesting? Why do we like it? Now, I also threw out this question to you guys out on Facebook and Twitter, and we got several responses. On Twitter, I'll just read those real quick since it's easy to get out of the way. The Reader's Timeline says, for me, it's the original trilogy, which I watched as a youth, was almost a magical experience. Great technology and effects and story. Now I'm more interested in the expanded universe, mostly due to its vastness and continuity. Bethany from the Star Wars Report says, the vastness of the universe, also the moral of how one man can make a difference. A young farm boy can blow up the Death Star. Her brother Riley says it's a tale of self-empowerment. You can make a difference. And their co-host, Mark Herleman, says epic adventure on a galactic scale. And then we have Michael Ferris, and he says, all I know to say is everything about it. Okay, except for Ewoks. So, and then we also got a couple of responses from Facebook. Jesse, Brian, and Thaddeus responded in as well to this on this topic. Jesse says, I've always said it's about imagination, having fun, using your brain for stories and music, and never being limited to one thing. Brian says, there's a lot of things I can mention, but to answer this in a nutshell, with movies, the Clone Wars, and the EU, it's the way you can get immersed in it, with its depths and layers of characters and storytelling, but still feel rooted in the real world. And then Thaddeus replies, I agree with Brian. The depth of Star Wars universe has been what has been what has kept me around for about 15 years. I would say it's unmatched in the arena of fiction, with a possible exception of Middle Earth. But you combine the accessibility of the material with the depth of the galaxy far, far away, and you get a potent combo. So, apparently, our listeners like the story, the depth, and the vastness of the Star Wars universe, and that's the lure. So we have a lot of thoughts, I'm sure, on this subject, and I feel like I've talked a lot so far this episode, so I'm going to let you guys kick this off.
Great.
Okay.
I have, basically, I broke mine down into a few different categories of what I think, not only for me, but also in, you know, in the wider audience, what makes Star Wars so exciting. And I'm going to start at the very, very beginning. Now, the brutal one can probably speak to this much better than I, as I hope I'm not dating you here, but I believe you were actually around when they first came out.
Oh, yeah. I'm an ancient Sith, yeah.
Yes. I think one of the first things, though, about Star Wars, and for all people, is how it taps your imagination. You know, right from the beginning, the first time you see Star Wars, you know, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, when that comes up on the screen, I mean, it's basically George Lucas's way of inviting you into a fairy tale. You know, it's not, you know, once upon a time. That's basically what that entrance screen's all about. It's saying, let yourself become immersed in this fairy tale I'm about to tell you. And then the opening crawl itself was something never done in movie history. And look how many people have run with that idea in films today. And from the very get-go, Star Wars grabs you, and there's movement even to this long, you know, not, I guess it's not that long, but the dialogue of the film, I mean, it begins with these words that even the words themselves grab you as they move up the screen against this backdrop of space. I mean, it just grabs you right from the beginning. And I think that's something that, I mean, yes, lots of movies do that. They grab you right from the beginning. But Star Wars does it in such a different way. Lord Bruticus, what did you think the first time you saw Star Wars?
Okay, well, you're asking me to recall a memory from, how long has it been now? 35 years?
Sure.
Well, here's the deal. In 1977, I was 4 years old, and my grandmother, who was, you know, she was a very nice lady, she took me to see Star Wars because rumor had it that all of the kids and their grandparents went to see this movie. I remember that. I had a lot of friends there that their grandparents were there with them. Odd. I lived in a fun town. Now, when I first saw Star Wars, of course, you see the words come on the screen. I'm four. I don't know. I don't know how to read, you know. But the first thing that I remember is the Star Destroyer shooting the Tantive IV, what came to be known to me as the Tantive IV. And then all of a sudden, Darth Vader coming through the passageway there. And let me tell you something. As soon as Darth Vader appeared in that passageway there, he scared the poodoo out of me. I was four. He scared the poodoo out of me. And I enjoyed it. I really did. I have been a lover of Darth Vader, and even more so of Emperor Palpatine, ever since the original trilogy. I love Emperor Palpatine. Why is that? I suppose we're here to talk about that, aren't we? And it captivated me at the age of four. Now, there are those that have compared Star Wars to great classics of literature. There are some that say that 100 or 200 years from now, Star Wars will be compared to the 20th century version of the Iliad or the Odyssey. It's just a work of literature. It's sort of in the 20th century how great works came to be known, movies, basically. Interesting that I won't be around to see that, thank goodness. But really, for me, how does it... I don't see it that way. I really don't. To me, it's more than a movie. It's an experience. When I open the Iliad or the Odyssey, to me, it's old fiction. It's great, but it's a book. It's something that, we learn in school. To me, Star Wars, maybe it's something that 100 years from now will be taught in schools and how it relates to other great classics of other works. But to me, it's an experience. Of course, I immerse myself in it to such a degree that I give back to the community. I'm a costumer. I belong to a costuming group. And I love it because I get to dress up in a costume and give back to the community, do charity work stuff, while dressing up as a Star Wars character. Hey, I get to have fun and do something good with it at the same time. But there is an allure there, allure, is that French? kids. I mean, face it, what is the target audience? Is it kids or is it everybody? Interesting. It certainly captivated me as a four-year-old, and I look forward to chatting with the rest of you non-Darksiders as to why that might be.
Jason?
Well, when I first saw it at 7 years old when the special editions were released in theaters. What captivated me was the fact that it was just so huge and so vast, and being only the third movie I'd seen in the theaters, my imagination just like skyrocketed out of control. So I guess the part of the allure there was just it was so big and so different and so vastly unique from anything else I'd experienced that it was just the imagination and the ability to just... lose yourself, not lose yourself, but to go and experience this whole thing called Star Wars was just something so new and foreign to me that I just had to know more. I had to learn more. And so not only did I continue to see the films as they came out, but I started to read the books and, you know, go online like almost every day to find out what was new and, you know, learn about all these back characters, you know, minor characters and things like that. And I guess it's just the richness of the whole experience, you know, that somebody, oh, that guy in the fourth row, you know, second from the left, his name is, you know, this, and he's got this backstory. And that whole thing made me feel like, well, I could just sit right in that row over there, and I'm part of it. So I guess that was part of the initial thing that grabbed my attention and sort of set me off on this. I guess it's become a lifestyle almost now at this point. So,
yeah, I think, you know, the imagination, one of the most key elements to Star Wars is the way it draws out your imagination. Like you said, the target audience, we don't know. I mean, George Lucas has made it clear that the prequels, when he made the prequels, he was making them for young people. But again, it's a story for all ages. And I think that what Star Wars does is it does bring out that child within us, even as adults. You know, Joe, I know you're part of a costuming group. And, you know, there's even these adults who still want to play in that galaxy. You know, and it's a way of continuing to be part of that, even as adult, but even as kids, you know, I mean, you know, you have lightsabers and spaceships and space travel. I mean, all these great things to lose yourself in. And I think, you know, in a culture today where imagination is so underplayed, Star Wars, in a way, brings out that imagination. It allows you to be imaginative. It allows you to think in a different form of reality. And I think that's what Star Wars does. It draws you into another world and lets you play in that other world, be it as a kid, be it as an adult. And, you know, when our imaginations are heightened, I think that we instantly have an attraction to something. And, you know, Star Wars allows our imaginations to run wild because that's what we see happening on the screen. You know, this is one man's imagination gone wild. And thanks to that, our own imaginations can come to life. And I think that that's obviously extremely important for children, but even more so as adults, to be able to continue to use our imagination and to see. I mean, George Lucas isn't a child. He was an adult who made a movie and, you know, let his imagination do the storytelling. So for me, that's one of the biggest things, is the way it plays on our imagination.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Star Wars was indeed created, not just as a an initial movie, but as a franchise overall, to engage one's creative imagination. Face it, when you watch Star Wars, picture yourself as a small child, like you were maybe when you were 7 or 8 years old, and how excited you got when Star Wars came on TV. Right away, you had to stop what you were doing, and you had to watch it. And what is the first thing that you wanted to do when Star Wars was done? You wanted to play. Mm-hmm. And what was it that you wanted to play with? Oh, gee, Star Wars toys, action figures, blasters, inflatable lightsabers. Yeah, we had those back in the day. I really think that it engages one's creative imagination such that kids, they want to immerse themselves in it right away when it's done. And there's something about it that that I really can't grasp why right off the top of my head. But for a 4-year-old watching A New Hope, especially back in the 70s when we had no other movies like that, you know, Alien, the 4-year-old watched that. I think that there's something to be said there. What is it about Star Wars that grabs a kid's creative imagination, especially the original trilogy?
Yeah. Allie, you just said, though, you know, this... Is that a toy there, Jason?
Sorry. Yes. Yes,
exactly.
He's still immersed in it.
Exactly. He's just... He can't help it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And that's exactly... I really like what you just said, though, Joe. You know, the reality that when you were a kid, exactly, as soon as the Star Wars movie finished, the first thing I would do was run up to my room, get out my action figures, and continue that story. And I think that that's so great because it invites you, even as a kid. I mean, obviously you're not thinking about this as a child, but you yourself continue to create something. You know, it's a catalyst to your own creativity, which is so, you know, beautiful that it's capable of doing that. And, you know, even to this day, I'll finish, you know, if I'm watching Phantom Menace and I'm watching the duel, you know, at the end of the film, all I want to do is grab a lightsaber and get after it, you know, like start, you know, fighting with someone, not literally, but, you know, I mean, it steeps your imagination that you just want to jump right into that and play along.
I get the impression that you just want to reenact slicing Maul in half. There's something about you that says, I want to do that. And never mind Obi-Wan, I want to cut Maul in half.
somebody has to oppose the brutal one.
Yeah. You know, they call me a bit, more specifically because of my force fart ability. They're quite brutal, so be careful. It's a good thing for several states. my neighbors aren't so
Oh, dear. Well, that's interesting. I'm sorry?
That's also a take on Lord Bruticus, but that's another story.
Okay, I'll go ahead and comment on the point that you made there about wanting to play Star Wars after the movie was done. And it's, you don't want to go out, and when you play Star Wars, you don't want to go and reenact, like, the Senate scenes or things like that, you know, treaties being signed. No, you want to go out and reenact the lightsaber battles, the blaster fights, the space battles, pod races, something exciting, because that's what Star Wars lets you do. The action there is so exciting. It's adventure, and you just want to be able to have something exciting in your life. You don't want your life to be boring, because boring lives are dull and nothing ever happens. So if you can go out and play something exciting, that just makes your life, for that moment in time, it just makes you feel like there's something bigger and more epic going on in your life than living in, you know, a suburb in some city somewhere. So it makes you feel like your life is being lived out on a galactic scale where the fate of the galaxy rests in your hands,
yeah,
whether for good or for evil.
Absolutely. And I think, yeah. Go ahead. No, go, please.
Oh, I was going to say, what are the characters when you're a kid that you want to be? I mean, I remember I shared this on the Sarlacc Pit podcast recently. When you're a kid, right away, who is it that you want to be? I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm Han Solo. And, of course, when I was a kid, I had to pretend to be those characters with my friends. Of course, I always got singled out as Carrie Fisher for some strange reason. My friends would say, I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm Han Solo. There'd be nobody left. And finally, they pointed at me and they go, you're Princess Leia. So I went down the street because I had this killer BMX bike too. Bar, oh, that was my Starfighter, right? You know, and my friend Billy Joe and Omar, those were my two buddies in the trailer park we lived at. Well, they each had these dinky little bikes with banana seats. And one day when I got pointed out as Carrie Fisher and Princess Leia, they came over and they said, "You're Princess Leia again." And I looked at his banana seat bicycle and I said, "You came over here in that thing. You're braver than I thought." So. but yeah, I mean, now as kids, you pick out the main characters, but nowadays, as an adult, you know, you get to have fun, especially if you do podcasts and you can do voices, you know. I like to be Watto these days, you know? How about that, huh? And it's a lot of fun. You get to have a lot of fun doing those things. And just immersing yourself in Star Wars, it's a blast. Why give it up, you know? I think the non-fan just can't really appreciate why we love it so much. And once you immerse yourself in it without losing your mind, because I'm not a good example of that. I look like I lose my mind all the time. But, you know, as long as you don't get too immersed in it so that you, go crazy, then it's absolutely fun. Why give it up?
Right. Yeah, and that's exactly it. I mean, there's a very interactive part to Star Wars. Again, it's not just something you sit and watch, but it's also something... you know, as a kid, that you actually go out and you want to participate in, so you play. I was just about to say, you know, it's funny. I like how Jason said, you know, you want to go out and relive the action and adventure when you play Star Wars. Well, I have one example, and my only example of Star Wars where I tried to reenact something that wasn't so fun and adventurous. When I was in high school, I was going out for the lead in the school play. I had never been in any plays before, but I was like, whatever, I'm going big or going home. So I had to deliver a monologue, and the monologue could be from anything you wanted. And I was like, first off, I had to look up what a monologue was, because I didn't know. Pathetic. And then I was like, all right, where the heck am I going to do a monologue from? So they gave us like a few examples from like Shakespeare and stuff, and I was like, there's no way I can memorize this. And I was like, all right, I'll use Star Wars. And I'm like, wait, are there monologues in Star Wars? Yeah, I probably picked the worst thing possible. I picked the monologue between Anakin and Padme when they're sitting by the fire in Episode 2. So I'm standing there in front of this very, like, prestigious, you know, artsy director and the play director and the people from choir. And I'm up there saying, you know, like, you know, I can barely breathe when I look at you. You know, like these really corny cliche lines. And I'm trying to be serious as I do it. Oh, that was not fun. And I did not get the part.
Something out of Episode 2 there, I don't know.
Yeah.
Why did you pick that? Pick something like the Palpatine says in Return of the Jedi, all his exposition there. You know, goodness.
Yeah, I know, I'm a fool. So, I thought I might, like, impress some of the girls sitting in the crowd, but I was a fool to think that. All right, one, I'm talking Star Wars, and I'm talking, you know, really corny dialogue. So, I didn't get any girls or a part, so... Be that as it may.
You walked away empty-handed.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. So, but, yeah. So what else for you guys? What else stands out for you?
Well, for me, I can't have any, you know, adventure or anything like that without my music. And the Star Wars music, I don't know, it's something that John Williams described it as endlessly compelling. And it's something that every time I go into my rusty old Y-Wing, I mean my Buick, I have to put in my Star Wars music, my, you know, thematic scores and things like that. That is the music that I listen to, and it's all because of Star Wars. I don't listen to hardly any popular music. Any stretch of the imagination, and anybody that asks me something about popular music is really kind of silly because I know nothing about it. Because all I listen to is these thematic scores and
It all started because one of my friends gave me the soundtrack to The Phantom Menace on my, was it my 10th or 11th birthday? I don't remember which, but it was either the year of The Phantom Menace or the year after The Phantom Menace. And ever since then, my musical choices have not been my own. And well, I can't think of any, I can't imagine any other scene, any scene from the films without hearing the music in my head, too. So that's also one of the things that I just love about Star Wars.
I love Star Wars music, but what is your opinion of the Cantina band music? I'm curious.
I think it's really fun. I do. I know there's a lot of people that find it obnoxious and annoying, and that beat in the background is just drives them crazy. I'm weird. I might be slightly crazy, so I find it perfectly fine and a lot of fun.
You
identify? I find myself whistling it at work sometimes. So.
Well, we like weird and crazy. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I enjoy everything about Star Wars. It's music. Even the Cantina music, even the prequels, even the holiday special. You know what? Speaking of music and weird and crazy and holiday special, who would have thought that until you watch that thing that Carrie Fisher could sing the way she did? She could have replaced Karen Carpenter, in my opinion. You know, she was awesome. You know? Yeah. So,
I have not seen the holiday special, so I feel full in my Star Wars soul that needs to be filled one of these days. So,
oh wow, you know, Lucasfilm will say that it does not exist, but you know what, I have a copy of it on DVD that I got at a con. I'm gonna have to see about loaning it to you, but I want it back. Funny.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's never been played in my DVD player too. I wonder why.
Don't want the DVD player to break.
Yes. So, something I wanted to bring up also about Star Wars is, and I'm kind of stealing this a little bit from the man who made them, George Lucas, but Star Wars is also, I mean, to me it's very much a modern myth. And that's, you know, in a lot of interviews, George Lucas has made it very clear, you know, when he set out to make Star Wars in the 70s, he felt that there was a loss of imagination, a loss of fairy tales, if you will, in our, you know, in our culture. And when he set out to make Star Wars, he was writing a modern myth, a modern fairy tale. And, you know, again, I've referenced this time and time again, but he worked closely with Joseph Campbell, and he drew heavily from The Hero with a Thousand Faces, which is Joseph Campbell's work on, you know, the way mythology has often followed very similar frameworks. And Star Wars does that to a certain degree. You know, George Lucas didn't create some new framework that had never been used, but the way he fleshed it out was what was unique. And I think that's what gives Star Wars the staying power that it has. The fact that it's still this popular and growing, you know, after 35 years, is the fact that there's something we can attach ourselves to. There's this idea that there's something more than ourselves. It, you know, we have this wide array of dynamic characters. We can identify with these characters at different points in our lives. You know, when you're young, you know, well, I should speak for myself. I mean, when I was a kid, I loved Han Solo. You know, Han Solo was everything I wanted to be as a kid. You know, he gets the chicks. He's, you know, bad to the bone. He's a smuggler. He can shoot from the hip. You know, he's everything a young guy wanted to be. But as I grew up, you know, I started to identify more with Luke Skywalker. But there are just so many different characters that we can come to identify with. And, you know, it's a myth is essentially meant to teach us some type of truth, some type of truth about ourselves, some type of truth about the world around us, society. And I think that Star Wars does that in lots of different ways. You know, I mean, we have the story of good beating, you know, defeating evil, the power of love, you know, as, you know, redemptive. You know, it's the story of a tragedy in the prequels, you know, and the story of a hero in the original trilogy. I mean, it creates so much for us to fall into, you know, as a myth. And it allows us to use Star Wars to help understand ourselves. We've talked a little bit about this in some past episodes, but, you know, as a myth, we find certain aspects of these films that we can identify with. And when we identify with them, sometimes they draw out truths about ourselves that we didn't know was there. And that's the idea of a myth. is it allows us to see deeper within ourselves. So that's enough of me ranting about that. I don't know if you guys have anything to say about that.
Well, something just popped into my head. Of course, I love everything Star Wars. I mean, I think Kyle Newman once said, Kyle Newman, the director of Fanboys, for those that aren't privy to that, he said that you're not a true fan unless you appreciate Star Wars in all its many aspects, or something like that. I don't know, maybe he was imitating Palpatine there. But no, I agree with Kyle Newman. You're not a fan unless you're really a fan. If you appreciate it all, if you bag on Star Wars, then you're not really then you have to question whether or not you're a fan. I think that, well, I appreciate it all. The holiday special, the Ewoks, Jar Jar, the whole bit. Why not? It's interesting how a lot of fans, I think, that if they don't like Jar Jar and they don't like Ewoks, they still love Star Wars. Why is that? There's something about that there. But you know what? I like Jar Jar. Well, I like Gungans. Jar Jar might be a bit of a stretch, but I like Jar Jar. And Ewoks blinking in the Blu-ray release and Darth Vader going no all over again. Is that really something to rant about? No. Therefore, I'm going to stop ranting. I think that it's I think all of the little subtle changes that Lucas has made to the films over the years, I think, enhances it, gives it a bit more of a refreshing experience every time you watch it. What do you all think about that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's starting to delve into a topic for our next show, so I'm not going to say too much about it right now.
Your
foresight serves you well.
Yes. Everything's proceeding as I have foreseen. Maybe I need to stop dwelling on the future and get back to the present. We can talk about that. That's an excellent topic. There is an allure there to the Star Wars films that even if there are parts that you don't like, there's something that just compels you to like it anyway. If you love sci-fi, well, that's a good foot in the door. It's a good start. But really, if you're into science fiction, if you love Star Wars, why is it? You got to ask yourself, what is it? Is it because of the reek or whatever that that creature is on Tatooine that farts and Jar Jar says, "Pee, you size it," little comedy bits like that.
The EOP.
Or is it the banter between R2 and 3PO? Is it the story of how a farm boy, as one listener said, grows up and gets to destroy the Death Star? Or is it everything? Is it the space battles? Is it lightsabers? Is it not only is there a mythos, a logos, and a pathos to the story that's engaging, the visuals, the music, everything about it, it's an experience. It's something that you walk away from going, gee, I really don't want to walk away from this. I want to spend more time. That's why as a kid you want to go play, because you just don't want to leave that. It's a universe that George Lucas, from his genius of a mind, has opened up for all of us to share. And we're just happy to partake in it.
Right. Now, like what you said, there are obviously aspects that fans aren't going to like. There's plenty of things about Star Wars that I'm not crazy about. And I don't think that makes me any less of a fan to have those issues. Again, I won't bring up what any of those things are, because as I hinted at, that is, you will find out that'll be a topic for our next show. But what I will say about that is, I think even though there are things you don't like, you're still a fan. You still love it. And I would equate it to, people who are part of religions. I'm part of a specific religion, yet I don't accept every little thing that religion says. Yet I still identify with it, because overall, it says something about who I am. And I don't think I have to buy into every little minute detail, because as soon as you do that, you cease to be your own person. You're being ordered around by something else. But the same thing is true of Star Wars. I think that Star Wars captures us at the core of our being, and we continually mature through that. And there's going to be things we love, and there's going to be some things we don't necessarily love. But at the same time, we always come back to Star Wars. You know, it's like a really good woman, when you go out with a really good woman and she, you hear something you don't like come out of her mouth, you're not going to just walk away right away, because you know who she really is. And you're like, okay, I'm going to stick around because she's great. I think that's the thing with Star Wars, is there's something about Star Wars that captures us that, maybe George Lucas makes a little change, that you're not crazy about. You're not going to be like, okay, I hate Star Wars now. I'm never going to watch those films again. I'm never going to let this be a part of my life. That would be ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
You're crazy, aren't you, Carl?
I'm sorry.
You're married, aren't you?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, yeah, he hasn't learned his lesson yet.
Oh. Well, but I liked your point there, Joe, about, you know, it's everything. It's the visuals, it's the story, it's the music. It's just, it's an entire experience. And George Lucas, whatever people may say about him, he is a cinematic genius. The way that he got so many little details here, there, and everywhere, pulled them all together into these films and got so much of it right is just amazing. Because, you know, and it became so successful that somebody out there didn't like that somebody was so successful off something that was fiction or a fairy tale or something like that. And so that is why I think a lot of people bag on Star Wars and hate on Star Wars, and we can get into that more in detail next episode. But it's because it is so successful. It's an idea, it's an imagination, and it's something that's not rooted in, you know, bedrock seriousness. It's fun, it's adventuresome, it's a whole new world full of adventure and opportunity, and it's just so much fun. And I'm one of those people that I love everything about Star Wars pretty much. I love Jar Jar. I like the cantina music. I like 99% of the changes that were made. I can't comment on some of them because I haven't seen the Blu-rays, which I should be able to see them hopefully soon. It's just, I'm not going to let a few little quibbles with stuff that I don't necessarily agree with ruin my love for the entirety of Star Wars. Most of my quibbles have to do with some of the expanded universe material and things like that. But it's not anything that is going to make me, you know, go home and rethink my life.
Yeah. and I think we gotta stop jumping in for our next episode, but you know, I think even the fact that there is squabbles and debates over Star Wars isn't a bad thing. You know, some people think, oh, you know, you don't like this, well, that's a problem. I don't see it as a problem. I think the fact that people are that affected by Star Wars, you know, that are so distraught and upset with changes, yeah, like maybe, you know, it's a pain if they're, you know, extremely belittling of George Lucas and the franchise as a result. That's a problem in and of itself. But overall, the fact that people are this moved by Star Wars that they have to discuss these things, I think that's again an indication of just how, you know, appealing Star Wars is to our culture. You know, today we have courses, you know, degrees in Shakespearean literature. You know, people who debate over Shakespeare's plays and what he wrote. You know, in the same way, that's starting to happen with Star Wars. People are debating this and finding issues, and I don't think that is necessarily a problem. If anything, it's a room for growth of the fan community. But again, that is a bit of a separate issue.
If they ever offer a college degree in Lucasology, I would be the first to go back to school. And I swore after I got my bachelor's I would never go back to school again. Be that for me to say that to a school teacher. But yeah, you know, Jason, I like the you and I see eye to eye. I guess that says something about you, that you there's a Sith in agreement with you about how you like all things Star Wars. I love everything Star Wars, as I mentioned, and except for one thing. The Jedi. I look at a Jedi, the way they're dressed. I look at the way they dress, and they look... any Jedi Knight, pick them. It doesn't matter. They look like a samurai warrior that got out of bed on the wrong side and threw on their bathrobe. That's what I think. Whereas the Sith, we dress in all black like ninjas with more regal flair. Otherwise, I have nothing wrong with Star Wars at all.
Well, then that may be something that we might come into disagreement at Celebration 6, because I plan on constructing a Jedi costume for C6. So we may have to duel it out on the convention floor at Celebration 6.
Well, I regret to say that I will not be at C6. Financial reasons. I can't make the trip. But nevertheless, the Minions of the Dark Empire Costume Club will be there. It'll be their first. They'll have their first table. It'll be their debut as an established costume group. And look for an 8-foot by 18-foot wide photo backdrop of a concept art of Korriban Temple, which we got permission from Lucasfilm to use as a photo backdrop at our table there. And of course, the 501st and Mandalorian Mercs and the Rebel Legion will have their huge displays. But we've got it going on for our debut there. And I'm very glad that the Minions of the Dark Empire, even Sans the Brutal One, will be there in force. I think we have over 40 members that will be there in costume, so I'm very excited for that for them. And I'm going to be at Connuga, CONNWGA.com, not to use your podcast to give them a selfless plug, but I'll be there in the middle of February, and we're going to be doing a dress rehearsal called a Meet the Fan Groups panel, and it's a dress rehearsal that'll be moderated by me. There's going to be a larger panel of the same kind at C6 to get your listeners that are going to Celebration 6 all revved up, perhaps. It's a panel where it's not just a Meet the Fan Groups panel, but it's where we are going to make something of a bit of a historic declaration, I do believe. It's we're hoping to, make an announcement jointly that we all plan to work together for the better causes of charity and things like that, it's going to be a moment in fan group history, I think, where we just declare that we all want to get along, I think, and it's going to be a lot of fun. If you're going to Celebration 6, look for that, because if you're looking to join a costume, you said you're going to put a Jedi outfit together. Well, far be it for me to tell you what side to join, but if you're looking to join a fan group, there is a Meet the Fan Groups panel at C6 that definitely you will not want to miss.
Well, there you go.
Very interesting.
Nice little plug for C6. So, although we regret that the Brutal One will not be there.
Yeah, I regret it too, unfortunately. It's Orlando, a second time in Orlando there. I wasn't even there at C5 either, but I mean, there's no way I'm going to make it to Orlando. But someday I shall make a celebration, just not yet.
Sure. Well, just that little side note there again shows. I want to tap into that idea, and obviously I can't say too much because I'm not a customer, so obviously I'll let, Joe say more about this, but the fact that you have so many people who are joining these costuming groups, it shows how, again, that appeal of Star Wars and the fact that we want to become part of that galaxy. And I think that there's a certain healthy level of escapism that Star Wars provides for us. It allows us to escape from a little bit of the mundane world that we live in. But even more than that, it's not that we're trying to escape and try to live in that other galaxy. If you are, then you might literally be insane. But otherwise, I think that there's a real healthiness to the fact that Star Wars allows us to participate in something just so exciting. And there is such a, tremendous level of community to Star Wars, which, the three of us all got to experience that together when we were at Fan Days and in Dallas just, a few months ago. The fact that there are these conventions shows that Star Wars creates a sense of community. And again, that comes from that mythos of Star Wars. There's something that we all identify with in Star Wars, and there's going to be lots of different things we identify with. And that's why Star Wars, I think, speaks to so many people. There's something in it for all of us and for all ages. Star Wars to me is ageless. It's going to be timeless. It's a work of art that will be, I wouldn't be surprised if there is a degree in Lucasology in 50 to 100 years, this stuff is just so powerful. And Jason and I have talked about this in part in some of our other episodes about, there's different aspects of Star Wars, different scenes in Star Wars that speak to us at different points in life. When you're a kid, pretty much your favorite parts of Star Wars are the action sequences, the battles, the lightsaber fights, and that will always be there. But then, when you were younger, the romantic scenes with Han and Leia, the romantic scenes with Anakin and Padme, or Luke being trained as a Jedi, these things are a little bit more, slower paced, not the most exciting thing when you're a kid, but as you grow up, you realize, wow, I'm also dealing with stuff like this. I'm dealing with a relationship trouble like Anakin, or... I'm trying to get this hot princess, in a gold bikini to come over to my place, or I'm trying to find out who I am, just like Luke Skywalker is. And you can find a level of depth in Star Wars that can often be overlooked, I think, by non-fans. It's just a movie. Well, again, it's not just a movie. It is an experience. It taps into all of us. You know, it taps into our emotions. It taps into our feelings. And, well, those are the same thing. But, there's such a level of depth to Star Wars that you can identify with it throughout much of your life.
Oh, yeah. If you're trying to make a fan girl out of your significant other and she likes chick flicks, go throw on episode 2. I'm sure she'll fall for Star Wars immediately. I love Star Wars. I don't mind episode 2 at all. If I were to rank my favorite Star Wars movies, episode 2 would probably be on the bottom. But, hey, I love the Geonosis battle. So, hey, it all works for me. But you know what? Girls like chick flicks. I can't stand chick flicks. There are ways in Star Wars that I think everyone can identify with. And the love story, girls like that, don't they? There's something about girls and love stories. I think that they would find that alluring, right?
Oh, sure.
True. And I like, to sort of piggyback off of what Carl was saying about, identifying with people. And it's with the characters in Star Wars. It's because that they're so familiar. I mean, they're timeless, yet next door almost. It's because of the archetypes and the way that George Lucas was able to set up all the characters. It's something that gleaned from mythology and ancient stories. It's all the best and the worst of human nature put into these characters, and yet it's presented in such a way that it's like, it's you, it's your friend, it's, your parents, it's your little sister or something like that. For me, at 10 years old, watching The Phantom Menace, I identified with Jar Jar because he was clumsy and felt out of place, and that's where I was at that point in my life. I was clumsy and very out of place. I'm sorry?
I didn't mean to cut you off. Were you banished?
No, not quite. But I did have big ears, so...
Oh, I see. Okay. But you were clumsy, huh?
I was clumsy. My legs kind of grew before the rest of my body did at that age. So I was a scrawny little Gollum-looking child at that age, and... felt very out of place. So it was, that's probably one reason why I like Jar Jar so much. And that's something I will save for a later podcast. But of course, now as I'm older, I identify a lot more with Luke and the decisions that he made, training to be a Jedi and things like that, because of where I am, where I'm at in my life right now. But that's something that, I've gone through almost the entire films there, Phantom Menace to Empire Strikes Back. I've just got to, come out on the other side, and I'm at Return of the Jedi again. So, I haven't killed anybody, so I kind of skipped over Anakin in Revenge of the Sith. Hopefully that will not happen.
You haven't killed anybody, and yet you identify with Luke, and you call this thing the Wampa's Lair. You haven't killed anybody, but you have an urge to cut something's arm off, right?
Sometimes, yes.
Something else with Star Wars too is, there's something very optimistic in Star Wars, especially in a culture today that is so pessimistic. We always see the worst in the world, and we see the worst in each other. But there's something about Star Wars that's very uplifting. It is a bit corny, and George Lucas is very upfront, like, I know my films are a bit corny. He's fine with that, and so am I. But there's this very optimistic feel, and to me, the best scene that captures that is, the end of The Empire Strikes Back. The Empire Strikes Back, the reason most people love it and choose it as their favorite film, I'm not saying everyone, but many fans pick that as their favorite film. It's the film, it's the story, it's the part of the story where everything goes awful. Yet, at the very end of that movie... when you see Luke and Leia with the droids watching Lando and Chewie fly off, you have this deep-seated hope that things are going to be okay. Things are going to work out because these are the good guys. And you have this, there's something rising up in you that just says, I know that even though things have, you know, gone crazy and things are, like, falling into chaos, I know that good will win. You just have the sense. Even at the end of Revenge of the Sith, you know, the scene where Obi-Wan takes baby Luke to Beru and Owen, you know, and he rides off and they're looking into the sunset, which, you know, is such a masterfully put together scene. But again, there's this sense of hope. You know, Revenge of the Sith is an entire film where everything goes bad, much like Empire. And yet, at the very last scene of that film, I mean, yes, we know, obviously, as Star Wars fans, you know, things obviously, you know, the good guys will win. We've seen the later films. But even without that, that scene shows us that, you know, even when things get really, really bad, the good will prevail. There is this underlying theme to Star Wars that I think is attractive to people, especially, especially today. You know, it gives us such a sense of hope.
Yeah, uplifting.
Which may not sit well with the brutal one.
Well, maybe not. Yeah, uplifting, yeah, I'm not into that gobbledygook, but yeah. But really, I think that Star Wars itself, why are people so drawn to it, aside from all of the space battles and lightsaber battles and all that? It just draws you in because of, when you add everything together, I mean, it's all of the ingredients put together. It's the perfect storm of what people like to see in a movie. Okay, maybe the acting isn't so great. Maybe the storytelling is a little bit off. But when not to put George down, his storytelling is awesome. Hey, don't sue me, George. We love you. It's a perfect storm of ingredients. The music is awesome. The visual effects are awesome. What we love about science fiction is awesome. And the overarching story, maybe not the storytelling, but the dialogue that could use a little fine-tuning perhaps. But the overall story itself is, again, it's a classic. It's been compared to a modern-day version of the Odyssey, the Iliad, you name it. They're out there. It'll be one day considered an American classic of literature. I think, well, we look at a lot of movies these days, be they Star Wars, Titanic, you know, all the big ones, maybe even Avatar. 100 years from now, those are going to be considered the classics like we consider books from a couple hundred years ago as classics. Like Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Oh, yeah, that's considered one of the greatest literary pieces of all time as far as that type of work goes. We'd never say that about Star Wars now, but you watch. If we're fortunate enough to live about 100 or 200 years from now, right? Yeah, we'll be talking like Yoda, we will. we'll see Star Wars right up there alongside those classics as just one of the greats. So for me, all I can say is that I'm fortunate enough to be living in and enjoying something with a passion that we have podcasts like The Wampa's Lair, The Sarlacc Pit, Dark Empire Radio. Hey, give myself a plug. And fan films. Hey, there's a topic if you haven't done one already. You know what? I got there's awesome fan films out there. You know, I'm looking at some great ones. My favorites, Reign of the Fallen, Wrath of the Mandalorian. They're all here. You know, why do we collect fan films? Why do we dress up? Why do we play with toys when we're in our 30s? It's because we don't want to let this go. It's something that just keeps us enthralled. We love it so much. And why? Because we recognize that it's just a classic, and we're a part of it, and I'm honored to be a part of it. And George allows us to be a part of it. He's not going to sue us. He allows people to make fan films. He allows, here's the marketing genius. I mean, we talked about how kids love to go play with their toys right after the movie, and what a great way to make a buck. You know, okay, we'll make them more toys they can go play with. And so he's sitting on top of his billions, and he owns the rights to literally everything Star Wars. If he wanted to, he could turn around and sue people that make fan films and lightsaber stuff that you find on YouTube and say, hey, look, no, that's our property. You can't do that. Instead, no, what does he do? He allows people to come in and say encourages the fan film stuff. In fact, there's even George Lucas Fan Film Awards, I believe. So, you know, George even gives back to the community, you know, in the same way that we customers do. He encourages that creative development. And look at how many people famous people have come around, movie makers and such, that have come around because of George and Star Wars. Kevin Smith, to name one. Who else is out there? Seth Green, perhaps. The filmmakers and icons like that. So, you know, we have nothing to say to George except thank you, a great big thank you for creating something out of his mind that we all just love, and it is timeless. And what a way to have fun in our lives, but to just be a part of it. Even if we're not in the movies, we can still become a part of it in some way.
Hmm. Absolutely. I think, you know, when you think of Star Wars, the first thing you need to ask, you know, again, you keep saying, you know, what is it we like so much? What is it we like so much? How about the fact that it changes who we are? Star Wars, for so many fans, and even, you know, from the hardcore fan to just the person who loves watching Star Wars every month, you know, Star Wars changes us. And I think that that is what is so key to why these films are so popular. It changes so much about ourselves, you know. It makes us different. And anything that does that to you is something you're going to want to stick around, you know, be it a girl, be it a piece of music, be it a movie. And especially with Star Wars, it has so much that it changes who we are. It changes how we think about ourselves. It changes how we think about the world. Now, that is tremendous power that George Lucas has. And he doesn't wield it, you know, like a tyrant. Like you just said, you know, Joe, he offers it up for us to do more with it. And I think, you know, what Star Wars does is it takes who we are. When you sit down and watch Star Wars, be it the first time or the thousandth time, when that film ends, you are in a different state of being. You are different somehow. And as a fan of Star Wars, you are different. Like, the way you live your life, the way you relate to things, you are different, and that's what makes Star Wars so attractive. It can change literally who you are.
My ex-wife would agree with you on that. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and not only is it just the fact that these films are incredible and things like that, but it's the fact that it just keeps growing and growing and growing and growing beyond that. I mean, we've got so many books and comics that you could just have a library dedicated just to those. We've got all, you know, unlimited amounts of video games coming out about it. You know, we just had the launch of The Old Republic last month, which was supposed to be like breaking some records there. And then we've got, you know, the toys. We've got the TV series that they've done. They, you know, even back in the 80s, they had, you know, droids and Ewoks. Now we have the Clone Wars. It just keeps growing and keeps getting bigger, and there's so much more to enjoy and to be a part of. And that's what makes it – and there's always something new. There's always something new to learn, something new to explore, and that's what makes it so entertaining and so enjoyable, at least from my humble perspective.
Yeah. It invites us in to something bigger than ourselves, and I think that is something all people love. We all want to be part of something beyond just ourselves, and Star Wars in so many ways allows us to do that. Literally, the idea of the Force. You know, that's one of the most captivating aspects of Star Wars, is this idea of the Force, that there's this reality that there's something spiritual out there. There's this reality that we are all somehow connected. And I think as a Star Wars fan, we make the Force real. You know, we make that idea realized because it connects us in a very real way.
You hit something right. You hit the nail on the head, Carl. You really did, because any Star Wars fan, I would say 99.9% of all Star Wars fans, because, hey, face it, every barrel of apples has a bad one with a worm in it, I suppose. I would say just pretty much every Star Wars fan out there is probably one of the nicest person you'll ever meet. I have never met a Star Wars fan I didn't like, and that's the truth. It's just speaking statistically, you know, with that 99.9% thing. But, I mean, no, I've never met a Star Wars fan I didn't like. They're the greatest bunch of people out there. And all the more reason to be involved with the fan community, be it the podcasting community, costuming community. We're all one and the same when it comes to our appreciation of Star Wars and our fandom, you know, there with their and such or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, we all family, aren't we?
Yeah, in a very real way.
Yeah, and that was something that I really was able to experience for the first time at Fan Days, because, you know, I've been on one or two online forums before, but I, you know, never really got too immersed in that. But then going to Fan Days this past October, it just blew me away how many people were there just because they loved Star Wars, and how nice everybody was and how welcoming everybody was. You know, you could just go up to somebody in costume, you know, you've never seen this person before, you probably never see them again. Can I take your picture? Can you take a picture with me? Yeah, sure, let's do that. You know, I'm gonna have, you know, these awesome pictures to take home, and just the level of energy that was at Fan Days, the just enjoyment, the electricity that was, maybe forced electricity, I don't know, but the electricity that was in the room whenever you would go into one of these panels or something, it was just something that I'd never felt before, and something that I'm really glad that I'm now being able to experience as part of becoming part of a bigger part of this fan community, because it's a community, it's a family, and that's something that we all like to be a part of. We all want to have some place of belonging, and it's nice to be to belong to something that is so welcoming, so open, so friendly, and so enjoyable.
Yeah, exactly. And when Star Wars fans come together at things like this, and again, my only experience of any type of Star Wars conventions was the Fan Days just from this past October. But like you said, I mean, there was such a energy there. And I think what makes it so fascinating is the fact that here's something that draws thousands of people together, and yet, you know, my mission when I was there was, and I know Jason, you were subjected to this, and I'm pretty sure the brutal one was subjected to my questioning as well. I was just asking the people that I met, you know, what's your favorite Star Wars film? Why? You know, and it was so tremendous to like hear everybody's response, because everyone was different, and I think that's something so awesome about Star Wars, is it appeals to all of us in some way, shape, or form. You know, boy, girl, child, adult, it speaks to us in so many different ways that when we come together, we can share what it is about it, you know, and when we share that, we're sharing part of ourselves. I mean, Star Wars, again, helps us identify who we are. But more than that, you know, I mean, it provides so much to talk about. There's so much to it. And again, like the EU continues to expand that. I mean, Star Wars wasn't a movie that was made 30 years ago and now it's done. You know, even with George Lucas's recent announcement of, you know, like, I'm going to be hanging up the saddles for Star Wars, whatever that may mean, we'll talk more about that some other time. But even if, you know, and George Lucas is going to die someday. I mean, let's just face that reality. I mean, he's not going to be here forever, but Star Wars will be. And what a legacy for one man to leave behind, you know what I mean? I mean, so say what you will about him, but he's a genius. And, you know, I think that's something that's so powerful about Star Wars, is when you get all of these people together, it's instantly like, hey, we're all in love with the same thing. Now, good thing that thing isn't a woman, and that'd be a problem, but, you know.
Spy's not getting married anytime soon.
Yeah, that's true, and my girlfriend will love to hear that little point. You know, when you get all these people together, you know, we've all been changed by the same thing. Not for the same reason, but all by the same thing. And that is, you know, that is profound. To me, that is a religious experience. You know, again, yes, I know I always bring this up in some way, but hey, it's what I do for a living, people. But in some way, you know, it changes who we are, just like a religion does. And I'm not saying that Star Wars is a religion or anything like that, but in a very real way, it changes us. It's an experience. It's not just a movie, like you guys have both said. You know, I mean, we go in for the experience, not just to be entertained. And as a result, it unites us. And I think that in and of itself makes Star Wars incredibly appealing.
You know, they do have the Jedi Church out there.
That's true. They
so
do.
Some stretch, there might be, you could argue the case that it is a religion.
Right.
And I'm a theology major, so hey. But, you know, there is definitely religious overtones within the movies. And in fact, the whole Jedi-ism thing is referred to by Han Solo in the original film as a religion.
That's
hokey
right.
Religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid. Man, I should be a smuggler costumer. No, really, yeah. And why would I be able to quote such a thing like that, Bill? Because we love it to death. And why do we love it? Well, I think we beat that to death. We just Star Wars will never die. And I long to see, maybe from the netherworld, of course, I won't be around, people studying Star Wars 100, 200, 300 years from now, having philosophical conversations like this one, even on deeper levels, about Star Wars. It's never going to go away. George has created an institution that is going to last when everything around us crumbles to dust. It'll still be there. And it's amazing just being able to be a part of it like we are now.
Absolutely. Jason, do you have any wrap-up thoughts?
No, not really. The brutal one just wrapped that up very elegantly for me. So unless you have any closing thoughts, we can wrap this topic up.
The brutal one, elegant? Oh, boy.
that is it from me. Yeah, this has been a great topic, though, you know? I mean, I'm sure this will get all of our listeners thinking even more for themselves. So you can't beat that.
So who's going to fight each other now?
Yes.
Yes.
What a great way to put it.
Yes. This episode's lightsaber matchup, we have decided we are going to pit, and it's funny because I believe the Brutal One mentioned both of these characters earlier in the podcast, but we're going to pit Shaak Ti versus Asajj Ventress. So,
Oh, I got to hear this. Okay, I'll be tuning in next time for sure.
Great. And, again, listeners, also, we want to remind you to stay tuned. At the next episode, a little bit more information about our first Wampa's Lair giveaway. At the next episode, I will be revealing what the giveaway is, what the product is we'll be giving away, and we'll be talking about how exactly we'll go about giving it away.
That's it.
Yeah, so way to be as vague as possible, Carl, but that's the idea.
Exactly.
But, Joe, how can people get in touch with you at Dark Empire?
Well, the Dark Empire's website is www.thedarkempire.org. You can find both the costume group there, our forums there, as well as our podcast. We're on iTunes, Dark Empire Radio. Just look us up in the iTunes store, free, of course, as a podcast, like I'm sure the Wampa's Lair is on iTunes. But just remember thedarkempire.org, and you can find all things TDE there. And how to contact us, there's a contact us bar there on the bottom, and that'll enable you to email moi, darkempireradio@aim.com. is the email address, and that everything to them goes to me. But all you have to remember is thedarkempire.org, and that's it.
Great. Joe, it's been
excellent.
A real pleasure having you, and we really appreciate your help, your participation, your excellent voice. Thank you so much for getting on here. It's been a real treat.
Well, you're welcome, and there, you see, everyone, the Sith can be appreciated. It just takes a little bit of persuasion, I suppose.
And again, for our listeners, again, you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/WampasLair. We're also on Facebook at Wampa's Lair Podcast. You can find all our episodes on iTunes, or also you can get them right from our website, which is starwarsreport.com. And you will see the Wampa's Lair tab there. And also, if you ever have any suggestions for show topics you'd like to hear, feel free to email us at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. So again, thank you for all your participation in this week's lightsaber matchup. We look forward to hearing more from you guys as time goes on. And Jason, if you would, if you'd like to end up the episode for us.
Sure thing. Well, thank you, everyone, once again, for listening to the Wampa's Lair Podcast, Episode 8, The Lure and Appeal of Star Wars. My name is Jason, and for the Brutal One and Carl, we will see you next time in the Wampa's Lair.